Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bum in the Bloom, episode 273. We're coming at you on a Tuesday night, Bloom Board time, talking play rater for pitchers tonight. We did hitters last week, first half, first, second half, and much, much more. We'll have some news, some other shenanigans as usual. But before we get to all that, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How are we doing, my friend?
I am fantastic, my friend. Great time in Atlanta this weekend. Total blast. No issues getting there and back. Great seats for both games. Result was expected. So that's fine.
You hung around for a while, though.
Hung around for three quarters. I'll take it. Looked at least somewhat competitive, which is the bar we're trying to clear at this point. But no, had a great time. I got back, did back to school night this evening.
Nice.
First day of first grade tomorrow for the oldest. So we are back in school mode. So finally.
Welcome to the party, pal. Welcome to the party.
You've been in school mode for two weeks.
Yep, a couple weeks.
We're a little slow up here in the Northwest, but whatever.
It's a little, you know, that weather, that overcast, rainy weather slows things down a bit up in your neck of the woods. So understandable. Do you guys get all the random days off that they get up here?
It gets
crazy. Yeah. What kids have in the school these days compared to when we were there, it's, you know, the old, I walked up a hill both ways, the snow theory.
But yeah. Say you're aging yourself, but that's
I do that regularly on this show. Yes, that's what we're here for. But good. Glad you had a great time at seeing a little tidbits in the Discord or via text. It seems like life was good for Bloom and Company over there. And that's how those trips should be. Let's put it that way.
I was not used to the East Coast time zone for baseball. I was kind of sweating out there. So I won the Tout Wars DFS tournament on Friday night and was like sweating down the last. Well, was watching football, many beers, sweating down the last few games, but it was like 12:30 in the morning. It's like, I'm going to sleep. I can't make it through. Woke up the next morning and realized I had won. But yeah, man, you East Coasters, I don't know how you watch night baseball. It is late.
I remember like my first experience with East Coast sports in general. My buddy got married in New York from college. And so we went out there. I was still in college at the time. And we're out there, we're partying all night. And some of those bars are open until, you know, some are like midnight, some are like 4 a.m. in New York, depends on where you go. I remember the first night we kind of took it easy and went back to the hotel. And it felt like it was 12:30, 1 o'clock still. And the Lakers game was on TNT. I'm like, what the? Like, it was like the fourth quarter. I'm like, what are we doing right now? I was like ready to watch SportsCenter. I thought someone was still good back in the day. Aging myself. Yeah. So I was baffled at what was going on with that. And that's where I was like, I could not. No. Give me 9 a.m. college kickoffs. Give me, you know, Hawaii until midnight. That's fine. But yeah, not this other stuff. Not like if the Giants were on until 1 or 2 o'clock every night, we'd have problems.
We wouldn't get your daily Patreon notes, that's for sure.
Not a chance. Not a chance at all. That's why I always said when I used to do Nick's podcast, I was like, I don't know how the East Coasters used to do it. Yeah, like, that's just insane. Having to stay up and knock that out. But we shall see. All right, let's get to our monthly. It is the September 2nd, the first episode of the month of September. The overall standings in the Bubba and the Bloom Listener Auction League, 10 leagues, 15 team NFBC auction formats. Ryan does a weekly column on the Patreon to kind of see where people are going. So with that, I will leave it there. You can expand on that, obviously. Where are we sitting right now with 1 month to go?
Yeah, so I do. And if you're not in the listener league, you can feel free to skip a couple minutes here. But we do want to, like, when we take a point of pride to actually see this through with the listener league and at least do updates. And like I said, every Monday morning, I do a Patreon post on it. But we like to do it on the pod just to give shout outs every month as well. So we still have Jason Weir in first place. He has been first, I think, in every monthly check-in that we have done. I can't think back to May, but at least the last few months, Jason Weir has been number one. A couple guys hot on his tail. Lucas Beery's number two overall. Ben Tidd having a hell of a year in the main event, but more importantly, in the Bubba and the Bloom overall. I mean, you know, Come on. He's at three. Aaron Asbury's up to fourth. Rare Steak ERA. That's my favorite team name of anyone in the overall. Ben Bingham falling back a little bit. Come on, Ben. You separated from your other Ben. So you're fifth, but first certainly expect a turnaround there. So that's our top five. Jason Weir, Lucas Beery, Ben Tidd, Aaron Asbury, and Ben Bingham. Winner of the overall gets free registration to First Pitch Arizona and the opportunity to meet us, which, you know, I don't know. Maybe a turn.
Some may say priceless. Some definitely wouldn't.
Some wouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Some definitely wouldn't. Michael Cicchini's in the chat saying Lucas blew past me. I'm stuck at 4 or 5. Michael Cicchini's actually at 6 right now as things have changed that day. He dropped one spot. So that happens. Josh Richmond is 7th. Mark Jordan is 8th. Tony Musso is 9th. And Kenneth Norton is 10th. And honestly, it feels like I haven't seen a lot of last time I recapped. Kenneth Norton's on the move, which is good. It's good to see, like, honestly, a lot of people we see in the Discord are actually near the top here. So everyone's getting their perks as well. So that's your top 10. What do you got, 11 through 15? Because there's some, obviously, more heavy hitters.
Larry Grischow's number 11. Eric Leggett, congrats, Eric, is number 12. Brandon Waddell is just having a year all around. 12th overall in our auction. Zach Carson is 14th and tied for 14th. Our good buddy we met out in Vegas, Steven Ruschak, is tied for 14th as well. So that rounds out the top 15. Let's get to the good stuff.
Yes.
I am.
You're on the move.
I'm on the move.
Every time we look at this, you are moving and grooving.
I'm up to, out of 150 teams, I'm up to 56, which again, doesn't sound special.
Should update your page. It's 57th right now.
Oh, Jesus. Give up a home run or something. I mean, Tuesday night's been brutal for pitching, so probably had something there. But yeah, 56th for me. So to be in the top third, given the way I started, is pretty sweet. Not going to outside shot at cashing in the league, but glad I'm competitive and still rising.
Yeah, I know. I'm not at the 57th, but considering where I started as well, I'm up to 84th right now. We're moving. And I think I was up to 7th or 8th, or maybe it's 6th the other night in our league, in the league I'm in. So I am trying to move up and at least make things respectable, as the start was absolutely horrendous for this team. And still, it's no 57th. You are having a heck of a run here, but I'm pretty pumped. I moved up 9 spots just today, so we're on the move.
And you are 2 spots ahead of Raj, which,
yes,
you know, I don't know if there's any side action there, but at least bragging rights when we get out to Mesa.
Well, there definitely will be bragging rights. There's no doubt about that. I'll throw a shout out to our buddy Martin Sokolsky. He's up to 99th now. After he's been talking in the Discord. He's like, he was down at the bottom for quite a while. He's making a point to make a run.
He finished, and I put this in the because every Monday I do not only the top 15 update, but the top 15 from the previous week, just the previous week only. And Lucas was number 1 overall last week, but then Martin was number 2 overall. And that, to me, that's super impressive for Martin, who's obviously got nothing to play for except pride. It's been a tough year, but you like to see kind of those struggling teams continue to roll these out. And honestly, man, like in terms of fab bids and like fab action, these listener leagues, the Vegas listener league, are just as active as any other league that I'm in this year. It's been pretty cool to see everyone kind of see this out.
Yeah, that Vegas league's nuts. The waiver wires feel like I'm in a 15. It's bizarre world over there. It's very, very competitive, and I love it. I'm hoping to get it back again. Hey, let's get 2 in Vegas next year. Let's get real cocky.
Oh, God.
Let's pump this up, but we'll see where that goes.
Remember our New Year's resolution episode, Bubba? Fewer fab leagues?
Hey, I knocked it down to, like, I basically have 6 that I have like 9, but you know what I mean. I wasn't going to finish the rest of that sentence. You know what I mean,
I do know what you mean, but. Yes,
I have 6 right now that I'm elbows deep in every Sunday. All right, so there's your listener league updates again. Thanks everybody for playing this year, and we've already had some people ask how do we get in for next year. We will get you that, but hey, we'll make it bigger and better the more that want to get involved, and we're looking forward to it. It's year 2 of doing it. We've expanded to 10 teams this year, and it's really awesome to see, as Ryan said, everyone's still going after it this late in the season. Where, you know, I'm in OCs and you're in other leagues and everything. Where a lot of the league gave up a while ago, so it's
getting.
It's,
like Peyton, Tolley, Nolan McLean unopposed in other leagues. And yeah, it's not happening in the listener leagues.
Yeah, doing the review with Ben this past week, there was main events that got like Tong and Tolley for $2. That never happens, ever. Yeah. Even if your funds are limited, that's just literally people stop caring at this point in time. So good, yeah. Good on them. All right, let's talk about a little bit of news and notes before we get this this Bloom board started. And again, if a guy goes on the IL, he's pretty much a drop right now. We'll try to talk replacements. It's tough, but for the most part, it's more just like highlighting a situation. So we'll start with Edward Cabrera of the Miami Marlins. He went on the IL with a sprained elbow, essentially ending his season. They're saying he might come back for a start. Who knows? But having a great year, Ryan, and it just brings in a question. Mm-hmm. I want to see him make a start before I start thinking for 2026.
That's you want to see Edward Cabrera at least come back and do like a Justin Steele's not the best example, but Justin Steele did come back and do a couple like 3-4 abbreviated outings at the end of last season just to prove that you're healthy going somewhat healthy going into the offseason. But yeah, terrible timing for Edward Cabrera, who like I'm surprised is not on this second half player rater Bloom board that we're doing as a riser, because he was one of the best pitchers, at least skills wise, in the second half.
Qualify innings in the first half, is my guess.
Yeah, may not have qualified. And honestly, I don't know. He had a 4.15 ERA over the last month, over his last six starts. So there was a little bit of bad luck there. But yeah, man, terrible timing for Cabrera, who really it looked to me like he was turning a corner in terms of replacements, dude. Nothing. Like, unless I'm missing something, somebody, which very well could be the case, being out of town for 4 days, but the Marlins, this is more of a general takeaway. Like, if you have hitters going against the Marlins from here on out, like Stream City, man, that is a brutal rotation. I don't know how long they push.
Sandy's been great.
I know, but how long do they keep rolling Sandy and Yuri out there? I mean, I guess they have to hold a rotation, but I don't know. Maybe they do because they want to build them up for next season. But yeah, Sandy's been better lately for sure.
I'm really curious. I mentioned this the other day. If Robbie Snelling, big time prospect pitcher, gets a nod down the stretch here, that would be something of interest. At least to see what he's got type situation.
Yeah.
And as Uncle Ted mentions, Ryan Weathers should be returning next week from the IL. That's another one for you.
Yeah, that'll last long.
Yep, exactly. Didn't get the surgery. Ask Shelby Miller how that went. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., IL, torn ACL, a lot of L's involved there, like the loss of his season. What are your thoughts on this? Obviously, he's pretty much missing 2026 as well, which is a massive bummer. Did you see how this happened, by the way?
Yeah, I did see the highlight. Pretty.
Blaze Alexander's first career game in center field basically ended the 2025 and 2026 season for Lourdes Gurriel.
Yeah, not great. Not great. And also not great is, well, I don't know much about Jorge Barroza, but Jorge Barroza played left field this evening in Gurriel's stead. I don't know. I could sit here and say Jake McCarthy's playing time's a little bit safer, played left field on Sunday, but like, that's platoon options, and Jake McCarthy just hasn't been that great this year at all. So I don't even know if there's anything, unless I'm missing something, worth replacing on fab-wise on the Diamondbacks.
If anything, I think this might actually lock in Jordan Lawler to more playing time.
Or Blaze Alexander.
Well, because Blaze could play center or even left at this point.
Exactly. And, just, and Lawler like, can... So Lawler can go for 4 with 3 Ks every night at third base.
Tim Tawa could get called up and play center field. Like, there's some weird scenarios here. But if anything, it locks in Lawler and Alexander for a little bit longer, which was a question last week, and was how that was that going to play out. Well, we're seeing it right now. Lawler at third and Blaze in the outfield because he's hitting too well to take him out at the moment. This one's interesting. I read it to Ryan earlier, and I'm like, I'm bringing it up just so the listeners have an idea that roster Adelis Garcia, and every day the lineup comes out and goes, why is he not in the game? Why is he not on the IL? Here you go. This is the news on Tuesday. Adelis Garcia left Monday's game with a quad injury. He's day-to-day, technically. Evan Grant, beat reporter for the Texas Rangers, he wrote a big article on it. You can't read it because you have to pay to read it, which is awesome. All these newspapers now, they're dead. But Evan tweets out a synopsis, basically. He says, no update yet on Garcia. If there's any chance that he'd be ready sometime within the next 10 days, I don't think they IL him. The only position player on the 40-man roster is Justin Foscue. Sam Haggerty could be ready next week from the IL. With Berger's activation, they are essentially at full strength. And chance of Adelis versus the Astros is very enticing, even if for one at bat, as the Rangers are like 2.5, I think, out of 3.5 out of the wild card right now. What I believe this comes down to more than anything, and he kind of says it with Haggerty and Foscue, and I learned it with the Giants today after the ejections took place, and I think I heard it correctly. Forgive me if I'm wrong. So rosters expanded on the first. Two spots. You get two more spots. But if I heard them correctly, it can only be one pitcher and one hitter. And it has to be on the 40-man, essentially, to make this happen. So they don't want to bring Foscue up, but it sounds like they're waiting for Haggerty to come off the IL or Adelis get better. So that's the way I'm interpreting it. Could be totally wrong.
How long did you're diving weird. Deep into this thing, man.
I said I wanted to bring it up, though, for people that are rostering him and going, why isn't he starting?
Yeah, true.
Well, this is what's happening, because this is what it was even worse back in the day, Ryan, when they had the rosters expanded to like 40 people in September. Yeah. They never put anybody on the IL at that point. So you're always right. Screwed.
I remember that.
This is a little taste of that medicine.
Whew, I did not know about that one hitter, one pitcher thing.
That's again, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's the way it sounded. That's why Casey Schmidt was day to day with the elbow, and then he came in and hit the home run anyways because Adames got tossed. Otherwise, Schmidt wouldn't have played at all. But that's why he was lingering around because of that said situation.
All right.
And the Rangers activated Berger and Chris Martin for their expansions of pitcher and a hitter.
And it's crazy, like the Rangers are, like in your quote that you read, like full strength was the word. Yeah. It's more just like out of options, but yes. It's kind of wild because the Rangers are actually like good. They're a game back of the Mariners.
Oh, like you said, closer now.
Just nice. A couple games back. I don't know what happened when I went to Atlanta, but I guess the Mariners turned into a AAA team. But like the Rangers can barely field a team, yet they are one game back of the Mariners. So. I don't know. Wild stuff. I don't know. I mean, is that at least a hold?
You have to. Like, if they think you can come back in 10 days, like, it is what it is. But I guess hopefully by Sunday we have more information before we say, is he a hold for sure? Let's put it that way. I'd wait a little longer.
More things for you to research there with that.
I was just shocked when I saw that. I was like, what? Yeah. And no, I had to listen. And yeah, lovely stuff. Could be totally wrong. Could have wasted 5 minutes for your guys' life. But hey. Here we are.
Wouldn't be the first.
The first or the last. So I got you on this one, boys and girls. Thanks for listening. Episode 273.
And there's we just lost all listeners to this episode.
If you're listening on September 2nd to a fantasy baseball podcast, you're a diehard already. So you do not care at this point in time.
We love you all.
Reese Hoskins. Here's another finagleman of the roster that I wanted to bring up, because we were talking about it, Ryan, a few weeks ago when he was rehabbing. Like, what are they going to do with Andrew Vaughn? They were doing reps with Vaughn at third base. Jake Bowers is coming back. Lots of moving parts. Well, here is from the manager on this one. Pat Murphy says on the Hoskins rehabilitation staying longer. There isn't a target date. He has until the 9th before his rehab's officially done. We just feel like with our roster, the way it is now, he's a first baseman and a DH. We have both of those positions right now because Chirio has to play outfield, Yelich has to DH, so on and so forth. And if we have the left-handed hitter for pinch hit situations, so to thread the needle, we still feel like we need a little more time. With Jackson Chirio's health and the youth on the infield, we need a little more time to see how that's all going to fall. The 9th is his last day on his rehab assignment. Basically, they say they have nowhere for Reese Hoskins at this point in time.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, sounds great for Vaughn.
Right, exactly. Like, that's actually, like, a decent – that's, like, a good
That's why I wanted to mention it. See, I told you I got stuck with this one.
I've got to stick. Yeah, it just took a little while, but
– story of my life.
I guess nobody probably has Hoskins, but you're not waiting around. If the Brewers aren't waiting around, you're not waiting around.
Well, like, this weekend, I was thinking, okay, if you, like, deep, if you want to stash, I could see it because he was real close to returning. But then with that latest news, I'm like, yeah, maybe not. The bad part I'm really nervous about here, Ryan, is because they mentioned Yelich needs to DH. He just needs one more game in the outfield to hit 20. One more.
It'll happen.
I need that to happen at some point in the next month because A Yelich only DH, still quite valuable. It's just not the same as, you know, the outfield DH or outfield Yelich.
He's at 19 games. That's
So one more, just one more, please. Churio, I love having him back. So I don't want to say I wish he stayed out just a little bit longer, but because they have Perkins, they have Collins, they have Churio. Like it's a crowded outfield right now.
Yep.
And the last bit of news we'll cover more on Thursday is Roman Anthony, Kyle Tucker. They left with an oblique and a quad injury to each other. They left on Tuesday. Julio Rodriguez hurt his wrist on a swing, stayed in the game. Lots of people are it's not good, folks. It's not good. Plus ejections in Colorado. Just buckle up for the last 4 weeks of the season.
Plus he got there may be internal suspensions for like Framber Valdez. Did you see that?
Did you see the quotes that just came out?
No, I just saw the highlight.
Here you go. I was reading it when I think we were going over the because it got good. Well, first off, Framber on the Grand Slam cross-up says, it was a pitch I wanted to throw. I called for that pitch. I wasn't able to locate it. Then afterwards, we just got crossed up. Afterwards, I told him sorry. That's what Framber said.
If anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, check the video on social media. But yeah, Framber throws a 93-mile-an-hour fastball on a pitch that's called a curveball, just nails his catcher and does not show any remorse.
Here's the other thing I just read. So from Chandler Rome, another beat reporter for the Astros, he's pretty solid. He says both Framber Valdez and Cesar Salazar, the catcher, were pulled into the manager's office after tonight's game. Afterwards, Valdez said through an interpreter that he apologized to Salazar, but said the cross-up was not intentional. There's more to come.
Yeah.
With the story, apparently. So because it looked bad. It looked bad on
video. It did not.
John Boy's going to have a field day with that.
Yeah.
And it was against the Yankees to top it off.
I would never do that to you, partner. Just know that.
I appreciate that.
I mean, I couldn't. I can't throw 93, but.
Yes, yes. And one quick thing before we get to the Bloom board, Michael Cicchini says, Lourdes' injury must affect 90% of Bloom's teams. That is a tofu bet that Bloom would have rostered. That is for sure. Definitely something to keep in mind. All right, now that I bored everybody and put them to sleep, according to Scott Burks, good show, good night. I'm going to hand it off to you. Let's talk Bloom boards for a Tuesday evening. Let's talk pitching Bloom boards on a Tuesday evening.
All right, let's do it. So similar exercise to last Tuesday, which was pretty well received. We are going to do the starting pitchers. This is starting pitcher only version of what we did last week, which is the first half versus second half, risers and fallers in terms of the Fangraphs player rater, which is standard 5x5. Leagues, you're able to go to Fangraphs and kind of do those splits, which is super useful. And so similar to last week, again, we're actually on the Bloom board itself is just your category stats, your actual surface stats, none of this barrel rate, home run to barrel, yada yada stuff. This is the stuff that actually counts in our standings. So what we want to do is look at the folks who have risen the most in the second half compared to first half, and then on the right side we've got our bottom 15 in red. The qualifier here is you had to have thrown 30 plus innings in each half. And I believe Fangraphs is using like July 1st as the second half. It's not the All-Star break. It is the actual, you know, half of the season. So that's what we got. We got 30 names here. Not to steal your thunder, Bubba, but I'm not going to bury the lead. Trevor Rogers, I did not expect this at all. Trevor Rogers is the number one starting pitcher in fantasy baseball for the second half. That is absolutely bonkers to me.
Well, let's mix it up and start with Trevor Rogers because you mentioned that in the Discord today. I wrote him up recently for a daily matchups article, and I've done it a few times of late, and every time I look at his page, it's absolutely amazing. Trevor Rogers made 14 starts this entire season. That's why it's crazy he makes his board, because he feels like he should have been near the top for both sections, if that makes sense.
Yep.
But he's been even better in the second half is what that comes down to. He's allowed 3 runs or less in all 14 starts. He's allowed 2 runs or less in 13 of them. He's allowed 1 run in each of his last 6 starts, going 7 innings in each of his last 4 starts, Ryan. He has at least 6 Ks in 5 out of 6. Like, you can keep going however you want to dissect it. Dude's been absolutely ridiculous this season, which is nuts compared to what we thought before. But then there's been some videos coming out about, you know, pitch mix changes, philosophies, all kinds of different deals with him. I think he went to Driveline or one of those specific things as well. What do you got on Rodgers? This is the guy that you were in love with at one point in recent seasons, and then it just completely, you guys had quite the ugly split up. Yeah. Are you willing to give him a second chance?
We had a falling out after the great 5.47 ERA and 1.50 WHIP from Trevor Rodgers in 2022. So it took a couple of years to get over that breakup. But yeah, fantastic stuff from Trevor Rodgers. The biggest thing for me is the velocity is back on the fastball. So it was 91.7 last season with Baltimore, a lot of that after the trade, and it's like, can Baltimore fix this guy? Velocity, I guess it's not all the way back up. Rodgers was throwing like 94.5 back in 2021, 2022, but it's back up above 93, which is that's a big deal to go from 91 to 93 as a starting pitcher. Like that's a big change in my opinion in skills. Now, is Trevor Rodgers the number one starting pitcher? Is he even close to that? No. Like all this, you know, 1.31 ERA, 0.8 WHIP, nobody holds that. But like the skills look pretty good for Trevor Rodgers in terms of like, I think he's pitching to a level of like a mid to low threes ERA right now. So you can both be lucky and be truly a lot better with the skills. And Trevor Rodgers is one of those guys where he's running pure, but he's also missing bats, throwing strikes, velocity's back. Like things look really good for him.
Agreed. Like that's why I said every time I look at his page, I'm like trying to find something. And it's like,
yep.
No, the dude looks good. Like dude looks really good with what he's doing. Skills are kind of matching the results. It's even like just looking at the indicators. It's a 1.39 ERA on the season. But like usually you expect some regression, but 3.62 Sierra, like to your point, totally mm-hmm. fine. Like mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that. The K to walks 18%. Like all these things are just like, yeah, this is what we want. Question for you here. And like I know people probably frown on it, but we did it last week. We'll still do it this week. We'll kind of talk a little 2026 tongue in cheek with 2025. When you threw this into the Discord, this is what I want to ask. I believe it was B Welch in the Discord. He says, because I said like it's tough. Am I gonna buy back in for 2026? I was trying to like talk about it, and he says that Rodgers probably fits in that bucket with say like a Flaherty, where we know the skills are still very good. Like Flaherty hasn't got the results, or even a Dylan Cease hasn't got the results, but the underlying stuff looks like he should be much better, where Rodgers is getting the results, and if you look at his underlying stuff, it almost matches theirs per se. Do you see that bucket making sense for you?
Like Rodgers versus Flaherty?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. Neither one went in our meatball draft, right? I don't think.
That's a great question. Let me pull that up as we're
like Rodgers might be one of the first pitchers taken on the probably by you because you don't have a staff anymore.
Yeah, my staff got depleted in the last like week. That was pretty sweet.
I'd still probably do. Well, no, that's close. I don't know what I'd do. I don't have to figure that out for a while, but I do Flaherty think Trevor Rodgers
Flaherty,
like
yeah. Flaherty went in round 10.
Okay. I'd probably lean Flaherty over Rodgers still, but I don't know what I'll do with Trevor Rodgers next year. Like it's the age old, do you buy in off of not even a half season? Let's see how he finishes, but it's the age old, like how much do you trust a change in skills for the pitcher? And I always say pitchers can change and reinvent themselves quicker than hitters can. And this certainly with the velocity change for Trevor Rodgers, maybe I should be more aggressive with him next year. It hurts because he's hurt me before.
Yeah. Some of those scars run deep. Some of them run really deep. All right, let's go back up here to Cade Horton, who has been second in the second half, right behind Trevor Rodgers, which is still pretty dang impressive. First half was 1.34. Second half of the second half since the All-Star break, he's thrown 42 innings, 0.86 ERA, 0.88 WHIP, 38 Ks to six wins. I dug in on him earlier tonight for Wednesday's matchups, and I kept looking, and I'm still like suspect. The dude's got like a 4.3 Sierra, and there's issues there. But when I look at the live Bloom boards that are out there, last 30 days pitchers, Cade Horton is on one of the boards. Last 30 days K to walk, he is fourth riser. He's gone from a 9% to a 22% K to walk over the last 30 days, which correlates pretty well to the recent success, Ryan. So where are you at in Cade Horton, who's actually the NL Rookie of the Year favorite at this point in time?
Yeah, with I'm not as high here as like a as Trevor Rogers. I think this is, I don't want to say almost entirely luck based, but even just comparing Horton's, you know, strikeout minus walk from first half to second half, it was 9%, which was awful, to just like league average now, which is 15%, like nowhere near one, you know, 0.86 ERA. So Cade Horton, like I actually think will be, and maybe this is like a 5 to 10 year old take, but like, I think he'll be overdrafted based on the finish, not only just the finish, but the finish on top of he's 24 years old and had some prospect pedigree. I don't see it as much in the skills for Horton. Like, I would take Rogers over Horton moving forward.
Yeah, I'm with you on that as well. I've been trying to figure the Cade Horton thing out as well, but he even went out and survived Coors in a recent start, which surprised me. The rest of his season schedule doesn't look too shabby either. He's got one, I'm using Ben's sheet for a second to highlight things, but like on Wednesday he faced Atlanta. Okay, it's tricky. But then he's got Atlanta next week also. Then he's got a potential two-step at Pittsburgh, at Great American. And then he's got St. Louis down the stretch. So it's kind of a 50-50 toss-up with Cade. I think we'll have a really good idea of who he is by the end of September with some of
those. Well, you're definitely, and this goes along like your, you know, Bubba's theory of fantasy baseball at this point, which I subscribe to, is with whatever, 4 weeks left in the season, less than 4 weeks now. It's like, no doubt, you're just rolling with hot hands and seeing, you know, seeing if this luck continues, because it actually hasn't. Sometimes with these pitchers, it may not be luck. It just because we can't see the difference in, you know, in a number on a Fangraphs page or something, doesn't mean Cade Horton's doing something that we can't see and doing it right now. So, yeah, he's obviously an automatic must start every single time, pretty much no matter the matchup.
This next name, he's earned it.
Here we go.
He's earned it. He actually has Zach Gallen is next on the board here. He's 45th in the second half when it comes to pitchers, 147th in the first half. He's thrown 47 innings, a 3.83 ERA, a 1.11 whip, 39 Ks, and 3 wins over that stretch. And it gets a little even better than that, Ryan. It is 6 starts in August, which is basically one less than what you're going to talk about here. It's a 2.57 ERA. It's 28 strikeouts. 35 innings pitched. We're seeing a guy with the thing that I'm concerned with, though, it's a 13.4% K to walk. So it's not like he's dominating when he's out there. And the Sierra suggests, you know, kind of lucky, but he's gone at the Dodgers for 6 shutout, face Cincinnati, Cleveland, not whatever, at Texas, Colorado, whatever, at Sacramento. So there's at least 2 to 2.5 tough starts in this mix is what I'll say.
Yeah, I guess. I still think Zach Gallen's kind of cooked. Like you mentioned that 13% strikeout minus walk. I also see a whiff rate, a swinging strike that is like 10% for the entire season. That's down to 7% over the last month for Zach Gallen. 7% is like truly terrible. League average for swinging strike is like 11.5%. 7% is, you get like 7 whiffs a game. Zach Gallen's not missing enough bats. I think this is pretty much entirely luck. And even with all this luck, Zach Gallen, he's the number 2 improver, but Bubba, he's still only been the 45th best starting pitcher.
I saw that.
I don't know. Some of this is because he was so horrendous.
He's actually the worst pitcher on the improvers list.
Okay. So
put this into context for a second.
So babe, Bubba, maybe you were not wrong about Zach Gallen.
Yeah, I dropped him a while ago. I have him like 1 or 2.15 still, because it is what it is at this point. It's been nice, but I'm prepared to be hurt. Let's put it that way.
I think I did. There were other risers who were like worse than Gallen, who were like the number 300 starting pitcher and like rose to 100. But I believe I just cut this at the top 50. So Zach Gallen barely gets through here. Should have cut him out anyway.
Should have cut it at 44. All right, this one, though, Jose Soriano, 118 in the first half, 17th best pitcher in the second half of the season, 48 innings pitched, 3.17 ERA, 1.03 whip, 46 Ks, 4 wins. Early in the year, he pitches great at home, struggles on the road. That's changed. He's been pretty darn good everywhere he goes right now. Just went into Texas and looked great. I'm a fan. I've always been a fan of Soriano. It's usually a roller coaster ride, which is proof first half to second half here, with the second half, if you stayed on for more than 8 seconds, you've had a great time here.
You have had a great time. And I don't see too much. Like the thing I really love about Jose Soriano is I'm a sucker for elite ground ball rates. That's why I was a big Framber Valdez guy the last couple seasons, which maybe I'm not anymore. But 65% ground ball rate for Jose Soriano is absolutely elite. And it's not just ground ball. Like, this isn't like what's his name, Palante on the Cardinals, who does nothing else except induce ground balls. Like, Jose Soriano actually, the control is not great, but he misses bat. So you at least have some strikeouts to go with the ground ball rate. I just think, like, it's almost impossible to have a bad ERA when you induce ground balls over 60% of the time. So is Jose Soriano this good? Is he a top 20 starting pitcher? No, but, like, I think he's in the top, probably the top 50 for next year.
No, that's, I can't argue that one. Scott Burks, resident Angels connoisseur. Soriano is 12 2/3 shutout innings with 5 hits and 14 Ks at Texas and at Houston in his last 2 starts. Yeah, he's taking care of business as the Angels are traded to fight for the wild card. Soriano is doing his part to make sure they finish just short of that wish. Jack Leiter, this is another one I like seeing on this board. I know there's the ups and downs, the young arm. We've seen the goods, we've seen the bads. First half, he is 1/10 on the list. He's 20th best in the second half of the season. 41 innings pitched, 2.61 ERA, 1.21 whip. The whip is the thing. 49 Ks and 4 wins. Like, if you go through his gain logs, dude, he's only allowed more than 3 runs in 3 of his 24 starts this year. Now, not all starts went deep, but that's pretty good. That justifies, or for kind of justifies, the 3.77 ERA. It's the 59 walks in those 121 innings to 118 Ks. And he had a stretch there was 3 to 4 walks in every single start. So that's what kind of hurt him, but still a 16% K to walk since the All-Star break, Ryan. Like, we've seen improvements from Jack Leiter where it felt like, I remember writing at one time for PG Tomorrow, like, they might want to send him to AAA and get his head straight where he's walking the farm and couldn't get through innings. It's looking a little better of late. He's not in the clear, but it's looking better.
Yeah. Not in the clear for me. I'm still pretty concerned. Anytime you have a double digit walk rate, it's just hard to be efficient. It's hard to pitch deep into games and enjoy the fruits of doing that. And with Jack Leiter, like, even though over the last month it's a 10% walk rate, which you don't like to see, but even worse, the ball rate's bad. The first pitch strike rate's bad. Like, everything that you want to look for control, for good control, is not there with Jack Leiter. So, like, the results have been really good for Leiter. This is a big time prospect guy. So you can, along similar lines, I think, to Kate Horton, like, I think you can be talked into some type of renaissance that I don't think I'm fully buying into with Jack Leiter. I still think he's a low 4 ERA type pitcher. Like, some gains for sure, but until the control improves, I'm not there with Leiter yet.
Yeah, this is like the typical profile I like to target in draft, sadly enough, because, like, I believe in the strikeout skills. It's at least 1 per inning, could be better. It's a guy that has a high whip. It's like, it's his Mackenzie Gore from the right side is what it feels like, a young Mackenzie Gore. I just kind of have that vibe from Leiter. He's one of the top draft picks at one point in time. Like, it just feels like he's a year or two away. Like, I kind of want to be there for it. He gets Arizona this week. Next week, he's at home versus Milwaukee. And then it's at Houston versus Miami for a two-step. And then he finishes the year at Cleveland. So those last couple of weeks could actually be pretty nice for Jack Leiter. He could be a dude that gets the job done for you in fantasy if he can survive the walks, to your point.
And schedule matters just as much as actual skills right now for the rest of this season, which is why the stuff you and Ben are doing on Bench with Bubba is pretty gold right now for the last 4 weeks.
Appreciate it. Gavin Williams, another guy that has massive whip issues. It's changed a lot in the second half, Ryan. A lot. He's gone from 96 to 6th overall in the second half. 46 innings, 2.33 ERA, 0.99 whip with 48 strikeouts and 4 wins on this set. It's been really impressive stuff from Gavin Williams. So what do you have for us here?
Luck. BABIP's down from like 310 to 250. Strand rate's way up. Still doesn't throw enough strikes. It's a 38% ball rate for Gavin Williams. I fully know I am a Gavin Williams hater. Maybe I'm biased at this point, but I'm not buying this for Gavin Williams. I sound like perhaps a broken record, but this is like the Kate Horton, Jack Leiter example on steroids, because a lot of smart people really like Gavin Williams. I don't think he's out of the blue or out of the out of the woods. I don't know why I said out of the blue, but out of the woods with the walk rate thing until he can throw more strikes consistently. He's not even missing. He's missing fewer bats over the last month than he has all year too. So I'm not buying
that's,
Gavin
that, Wood. And that's either. Been a skill set people thought he'd have. That's the weird part.
It's like a 10% swinging strike over the last month for Williams. That's below average, and you need to do something above average. Gavin Williams doesn't. So again, I'm a hater. If you like Gavin Williams, like, you can laugh at me, prove me wrong for sure. But I've been proven wrong in the second half so far with Gavin Williams, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, he's got at Tampa this week, so that'll be a nice test. But then it's Kansas City, at Detroit, who's, you know, they're pretty good too. And then versus Detroit. So not the best schedule. You're going to find out, I think, who Gavin Williams is when all things are said and done this season. A couple more before we – we got some time here before we switch over to the other side. But Shane Smith, he doesn't do a whole lot for me. He's 39th in the second half after being 120th. 35 innings pitched, 2.67 ERA, 0.95 whips with 31 Ks and a win. Like, he's been very serviceable in the second half. But it's – I don't know. It doesn't – I'd rather take a chance on a Gavin Williams or a Jack Leiter than a Shane Smith.
Yeah, even though Shane Smith did win me a beer bet this year. I would agree with that sentiment. I don't think there's a ton there.
No. Now, this one's great because I've always been a Brady Singer guy. We've talked about it in recent years. Like, Bubba, no, like, he's not that good, or he's a ground ball guy, or like, hey, he's going into Great American for the year. What's he going to do? Well, let me tell you, 4.08 ERA, that plays in Great American. It really does. Like, we could laugh all we want. That plays in Great American, small park. And in the second half of the season, he's the 13th best pitcher in all of baseball, according to the Fangraphs Player Rater. Brady Singer, 43 innings pitched, 3.53 ERA, 1.04 whip is what we want, the whip from Brady. 48 Ks to 5 wins as well in his 8 starts in the second half. That is good. And what I love to see here, Ryan, is we're chuckling, but a 3.53 ERA supported by a 3.45 Sierra, supported by a 20.3% K to walk for a guy that I remember being told doesn't strike guys out, which is always a big upgrade with Brady Singer. So what are your thoughts on a guy that's never really been a Brady Singer fan?
Never been a Brady Singer fan. This guy has 12 wins and an ERA north of 4. What the hell is, like, Paul Skeens would like some of that. Yep. But
that's out of Pittsburgh. Quick answer.
I mean, honestly, that's one of the biggest reasons why Brady Singer's on here, is he's got 5 wins. Only Cade Horton and Trevor Rogers, at least on this list, have more in the second half, according to Fangraphs. So I mean, dude, it's Brady Singer. We don't need to spend time with Brady Singer. He's not even a ground ball guy anymore. Ground ball rate's gone from
strikeout guy, baby.
How is he a strikeout guy?
20.3% K to walk. We're talking that big boy stuff.
No. The ground ball rate has gone from 49 to 46 down to 37 this year. So he's allowing more fly balls in small park. He doesn't miss any bats. It's a 10% swing. It's the same guy. Same guy. Get out of here with this.
Hey, it's working. That's all I'm going to say. It's working, Ryan.
It has been working. It has been working. Yes. I will correct your tense on that one.
Yeah, my English is never good. That's why I use Grammarly religiously. But Singer gets the Mets in Great American on Saturday. That might be tough. He gets at Sacramento next week.
Yeah, let's roll him out for that.
Let's leave Great American and go to Sacramento. That's going to bode well. And then he gets at St. Louis. That actually could be good. And then it's home versus Pittsburgh at Milwaukee to finish the season. So 3 of his last 5 starts are either in Sacramento or Great American.
Man, since August 1st, he does have a 10 strikeout game, an 8K game, and a 9K game.
Yes, put some respect on that tense you were using.
No thanks.
Michael Wacha, I don't have much here besides the dude just keeps getting it done. Doesn't strike out anybody. Like, it's not his bag. He's the 24th pitcher in the second half, 28 Ks and 47 innings pitched. Just doesn't do it. But a 3.04 ERA and a 0.99 whip. If you build your team properly, especially in a 15, Wacha is insanely valuable as drafts go on.
I know. And this is one where I need to, like, remove, because this is like the 17th season in a row where Michael Wacha has been drafted outside like the top 250 because the skills always suck, yet he is always doing this. ERAs the last four seasons for Waka: 3.32, 3.22, 3.35, 3.52, with whips all under 1.2. It's like, maybe he's been lucky for, you know, 20 years, but also think there's just something there. This is just another, like, yeah, 28 strikeouts in 47 second half innings is like absolutely horrendous. But this is what Michael Waka does and has been doing for years now. And you're right. Like, I think the 15 team call out is the right thing. Like, this is super valuable at the bottom of your 15 team rotation, because the waiver wire has been hot garbage for a lot of the season.
For sure. We're going to skip Jacob Lopez, T's and P's, pour one out for the homie. Amazing stuff doing before.
I tried to remove all the injured guys. Yeah. I missed Lopez. Yeah,
it's good all call. Good. He deserved at least a shout out because he's been outstanding home and away. Now Luis Morales is trying to pull up that weight. Clayton Kershaw, good thing this isn't tomorrow's show. He's 21st on the second half on the player rater. 38 innings pitched, 2.63 ERA, 1.04 whip, 23 Ks in 38 innings, which is a bummer. 5 wins, though, which is huge. I believe he allowed like 6 earned runs in all of August. He allowed, I think, 8 in the first inning or for first couple innings versus Pittsburgh tonight. So they unloaded on him. But he's been pitching very well before that.
I thought it was worse too. It was only 4 earned and 5 innings for Kershaw. So he must have
felt much worse. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Pittsburgh scored 4 on him in the first, and then Kershaw went 4 scoreless after that. So I don't know, man. This is I don't know. I mean, Hall of Famers doing Hall of Fame things. I don't think there's too much to analyze with Clayton Kershaw. If you picked him up, kudos. Still roll with him for as far as he can still throw a baseball, because for how good Clayton Kershaw has been in his career, the dude does know how to pitch. He's on a great team. Like, that's for the 5 wins, like, that matters. So this was kind of a sneaky, cheap, very good pickup of Clayton Kershaw in the second half here.
Yep, I actually have a share in I guess 15.
You do?
I have a share in one league. I picked him up for a couple bucks in FAB. I'm like, might as well roll it and see where it goes. But tonight's not what we're looking for. All right, this one's for you, my friend. George Kirby was 77th in the first half. He's improved to 28th in the second half on the Fangraphs player rater. George Kirby's thrown 49 innings, 3.33 ERA, 1.17 whip, which is high for George Kirby standards. 47 strikeouts in those 49 innings, 4 wins. He has 14 walks, if you're curious at home, to why the whip is what it is. But outside of a 7-run start, if we got that out of there, he's probably a top 15 pitcher in the second half. But we can't. We can't take that out, of course. But George Kirby's been pretty, pretty good once he's gotten back from the IL.
Yeah. And, I mean, I took George Kirby in the meatball draft as my SP1 in the 5th round, so that should speak to what I think of George Kirby. I just think we can throw away a lot of the first half with Kirby. Like, it was 11 earned runs in his first 2 starts off the IL. I remember watching those starts in late May coming off injury, and he was not the George Kirby that we know. And yes, had a blip on August 17th against the Mets, but this is kind of typical George Kirby, like, pretty high walk rate for him, but I don't know, man. I think he's still really good. Career high swinging strike rate for George Kirby. Like, I think the Ks, and you mentioned the strikeouts, 47 Ks and 49 innings for George Kirby. That's pretty damn good. That's one of the highest strikeout totals of anyone on this list, because George Kirby can volume his way to a bunch of Ks. So I think George Kirby is a low end SP1 next year. I know I am probably too optimistic on him versus the market, but that's how I feel. So that's what I'm going to say.
You do you, buddy. You do you. No one's going to stand in the way of that one.
Yeah.
If you held on through the struggles and you know, just turmoil that Jesus Luzardo gave you towards the end of the first half, because if we like cut out just probably part of May and June, really great season. But the first half happened. So he finished 63rd in the first half. In the second half, Jesus Luzardo was the 16th best pitcher, according to the Fangraphs player rater. Jesus has 51 Ks, 3.86 ERA, a 1.03 whip. Yes, did not stutter when I said that. 60 strikeouts in those 51 innings with 4 wins to cross it out. He's made 9 starts in the second half, Ryan. He has 6 starts of 3 earned runs or less. He has basically 2 walks or less in 6 starts, 7 Ks or more in 6 starts. his Sierra is less than his ERA right now in the second half. Yeah, dare I say, Jesus Luzardo's back, baby.
Yeah, I mean, that Sierra being lower than an ERA implies he's actually pitched better skills wise than what the 3.86 were ERA we're showing on here. So I don't know, man. Like, Jesus Luzardo to me is like really damn good. It sucks. The 20 earned runs, 22-0 earned runs in two straight starts, and whenever that was. And then it was the whipsaw, because then you either rage dropped Jesus Luzardo or you did not start him that following start where he gave up one earned run and struck out 10. It's just, if you ride this out the whole season for Jesus Luzardo, you've actually done pretty well for yourself. Ratios are still elevated, but I don't know, man. I think Jesus Luzardo is like really good. And I think the biggest thing, probably the most important thing for this season for Jesus Luzardo, is at least so far, is making it back through a full season. And so we're now going to have 180 innings in 2023, probably 180 innings in 2025. If we're trying to predict pitching injuries, which is almost impossible, you're at least getting somebody who has thrown full workloads in two of the last three seasons, and not too many good starting pitchers have done that.
Very good point. Looking forward to that debate this offseason. All right, let's head to the fallers side of things here, Ryan. And right out the gate, one of the most tilting pitchers, if you follow anybody on Mets Twitter, I dropped him this past week in my Fab League. So did the Guilds and some others. Kodai Senga was 22nd in the first half of the Player Rater, down to 114th. He's thrown 36 innings in the second half, Ryan, with a 6.56 ERA, 1.71 whip, 35 Ks, zero wins, because most of the time he doesn't make it five innings to qualify for a win. It's been brutal with Kodai Senga, like really, really bad. Any thoughts on this? Because I just said I had enough. Even when he throws five or six innings, it usually has 3 to 4 runs and 4 walks, and it just doesn't help you at all.
Yeah, this is terrible. So yeah. this is the number one faller, Kodai Senga. That's how this list is ordered.
Checks out, folks.
Yeah, checks out. At least the strikeouts have been there, but nothing else has been. I don't know, man. It all depends on when you cut ties with Kodai Senga. I remember doing live Bloomberg shows with you in the first half, and Kodai Senga was on that luckiest starting pitcher list in all of baseball in the first half. Like, I don't even think Kodai Senga was all that great in the first half. He just got extremely, extremely lucky. It was a 13% strikeout minus walk for Senga in the first half, which is not good. Like, it's below average. And then he had a 1.47 ERA on that somehow. So skills have even gotten worse in the second half, but also the luck is corrected. Again, it's all like, how quickly did you cut ties with Senga? Because if you held on for too long, it's been really bad.
Seth Lugo, a man that threw so many innings last year, he needed it to be as good as he was when it came to Player Raters and just fantasy success. This year, maybe the innings are catching up with him, Ryan. First half, 28th on the Player Rater. Second half, 117th, just behind Senga for the biggest dropper on this board. He's made 44 innings, but he's still pitching every day, every time out. That's still happening. 44 innings pitch, 7.51 ERA. Sierra's still like 5.4. 1.78 whip, 37 Ks and 2 walks. One reason the whip's so high, Ryan, compared to those 37 Ks, he has 24 walks and 55 hits over those 44 and a third innings pitched. It's not great for Seth Lugo. To add insult to injury on the live bloom boards, over the last 30 days, K to walk, 14% down to 2% over the last 30 days. He's the last one on the top, the bottom 10 fallers, but a minus 12% difference is not going to help at all.
Didn't the Royals like just sign him to an extension?
A 2-year extension instead of trading him. Good call on that one.
So that's not great given the decline. And Seth Lugo is not a spring chicken anymore at 35 years old, 5 years younger than us, 5 to 6 years younger than us. But yeah, a pretty bad duo of a career high walk rate and a pretty much crashing swinging strike for Seth Lugo. I don't see this. Yeah, it'll get better than a 7.51 ERA and a 1.78 whip, but it's still like not rosterable right now and probably going forward.
Yes, indeed. Mackenzie Gore, he's now on the IL, but he dropped to 1.16 in the second half. 7.54 ERA, 1.76 whip. We've talked about him on a few other bloom boards. kind of wondering if like September he'd show that comeback because it's the second half fall once again. We might not find out, unfortunately.
I was going to say, didn't he? He's gone, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that was affecting things. It may not be a coincidence to be on the IL with a bum shoulder and be this bad. So I don't know. Tough year. It was promising. There were plenty of Mackenzie Gore victory laps out there, and man, he gave it all back in the second half, big time.
Yes, indeed. Sonny Gray, this one's a tilting one because I keep throwing him out there every fifth day. 26 in the first half, 103 in the second half for Sonny Gray. He's thrown 50 innings, 6.44 ERA, 1.51 WHIP, 55 Ks to three wins in the second half. What's tilting with Sonny Gray, that 6.44 ERA, but we're seeing a guy with a 3.58 Sierra, so definitely not getting his way there. Still has a 19% K to walk, which is pretty darn good. It's we had a listener question thought us it's so BABIP driven, it's unbelievable. Like I've watched some of his starts, it's single, like it's just dinking and dunking them all over the place. It's 352 BABIP in the second half, Ryan. So didn't mean to steal your thunder, but for someone that rosters Sonny Gray, watching his kind of game logs as I kind of watch from my phone once in a while, it's very tilting.
Yep, agreed. 100%. You covered it well. Unlike the first three that we've talked on this list, Senga, Lugo, and Gore, I'm not concerned one iota over Sonny Gray. Skills look really good, and you covered it well. I endorse everything you just said. I will be back in on Sonny Gray next season, health permitting.
All right, Robert Ray, who's coming off a disaster against Baltimore, where he allowed 6 runs, which might have factored in to this changeup here. He went from 14th best pitcher in the first half to 84th in the second half, 45 innings, 4.6 ERA, 1.38 WHIP, 35 Ks, and one win. The walks are back, and the strikeouts are down in the second half. 35 Ks in 45 innings, that's not the Ray we've been used to, plus the 20 walks, Ryan. And honestly, his Sierra is much worse than his ERA. So I'm wondering if he's running out of steam.
That's what, I haven't watched Robbie Ray much, and you've seen a ton more of him. That's what I'm concerned about is the lack of Ks. 35 Ks and 45 second half innings for Robbie Ray. Like Robbie Ray needs to have, like I can live with, I mean, when you drafted Robbie Ray, you probably knew the walks were going to, you know, be part of the package, but you can live with it if he's got a high 20s strikeout rate, and Robbie Ray is well short of that. So I would lean on you to comment on, is he running out of gas? Is this just workload related, or is it something to really worry about for next year?
But like, it's coming off of TJ, it's got a few innings last year. Like, I think next year's fine. And like watching the whip and everything, it's why I've always said Mackenzie Gore could be like a Robbie Ray type. Just they have the same vibe to me, and it almost checks out every single time. It's very, very similar.
What's Robbie Ray? What's his schedule look like the rest of the season? Because the guys we've been down on so far, like Senga, Lugo, Gore, I mean, they're either hurt or it's just an obvious no start. I still feel like Robbie Ray is startable depending on the matchups.
Well, he's in Coors on Wednesday. So, and the Rockies have actually hit lefties really well over the last 30 days.
That's true.
I'm really curious to see how that one goes. And then he gets at home versus Arizona next week. Following week, 2-step at Arizona, at the Dodgers. And then the final week of the year is at home versus Colorado. So I like the last start.
If you can live through the bridge to get there, man.
Like Arizona, like on paper is not scary, but it still scares me.
And does Robbie Ray even make that last start the last week?
That's what I'm saying. If he even gets there, like, right. I don't even know if he makes that start.
Yeah.
Because it's literally it's the Friday of the final weekend of the season.
Yeah, dude, that's
if it even happens.
Is my man going 5?
Yeah, like according to Ben's sheet right now, Robbie Ray's like the 38th best lefty option the rest of the way.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that looks next.
I don't know. Like we're saying, he's a drop basically, or at least
in theory. In 12s,
In
12s, I could see a drop if there's a better option that you can use right now, because that's the whole thing is right now you need guys you can roll with. Like you can't be waiting. It's tough to wait 4 weeks to use Robbie Ware one time. If anything, you can drop him now and pick him up in 2 weeks for a buck before he makes that start if you really want to. I guess it's tough to play that game right now.
Yep. Agreed.
So Yeah, that's why I like looking at these schedules, because you're gonna it's never easy, but it kind of helps make the tough decisions, if that works in a roundabout way. Max Fried, this is another one, not quite Lizardo-esque, but if you've been patient, it's starting to pay off again. Max Fried was 6th in the first half, 72nd in the second half, with a 4.95 ERA, 1.43 WHIP, and 4 innings with 41 Ks and 3 wins. But what I will say, including tonight, 7 innings, 1 run, his last 3 starts, he's thrown 20 innings, allowing 2 runs right now,
yeah,
with like 18 Ks and 8 walks, like looking much more Fried-esque. But again, you have to factor in those previous 5 starts where it was absolutely dreadful.
It's absolutely dreadful, but not quite to Sonny Gray level, I think, like you said. But I'm not that concerned about Max Fried. The ground balls are still there. It's still a 50% ground ball rate type guy. It's no Jose Soriano, but it's 50%, which is really good, especially in that park. And the whiffs are still there for Max Fried. 13% swinging strike rate over the last month entering Tuesday's game. So, yeah, it was a tough stretch for Max Fried, but the skills are still, I think, pretty decent. And I mean, 14 wins, 15 wins counting today for Max Fried. That helps a ton. Like the 5x5 value for Max Fried is going to be very good because of 15 wins.
And it's just one of those guys where you pretty much pitch him no matter what, because
yes,
like the last 3 starts, Houston, Washington, Boston, 2 out of those 3 are not easy. Like Washington's easy. And then if you look at his remaining schedule, he gets Toronto this Sunday. That's never easy. But you're starting him. And then you got at Boston next week. The following week, you got at Baltimore. And then you got home versus Chicago White Sox. So overall, it's a pretty tricky schedule, but you're rolling him and seeing where it goes. A few more. It's like Framber Valdez.
Yeah, I didn't know he was on this list until like 2 minutes ago.
God. He deserves it because he's been horrible in the second. 5 innings, 6 runs, 8 Ks tonight to top it off. But in the second half, he's a 76th pitcher on the play radar, 43 innings, 4.36 ERA, 1.36 WHIP, 33 Ks in those 43 innings, which will not cut it for Framber style. And I remember last year he kind of had like a little swoon as well, and then he picked it up towards the very end. Maybe he does that in September. Not a good start tonight. But he also, coming into tonight, had 15 walks in those 43 innings. So pretty rough stuff, but I'll let you get the hammer here, because similar to Sonny Gray, they share something in common.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I'm sure I'm impartial.
You still
to
start him.
You still start him. I still think Framber's good. There is, I mean, and we saw it tonight. I don't mean to like make light of this, but Framber he's worked really hard to try and not melt down on the mound. Like, he has had some really bad episodes in previous seasons, and we saw a bit of that tonight with
just a bit, yeah.
Hitting his catcher, it seems like on purpose. So,
only guy to melt down worse than that tonight was Kyle Freeland. But yeah, it's a whole other story.
See, I did not see that.
I heard there were
ejections, but
I could have gone a lot deeper on my Twitter feed, but I kept it at baby back bitch.
Oh God! All right, we'll keep going. Framber Valdez. I could have really gotten you going, but we'll.
Oh yes, you could.
We'll be good tonight. I still think Framber's fine. I honestly, it looks like the same skill set as Max Fried, except more ground balls. So I'm not going to sit here and poo-poo Max Fried or Valdez and talk up Max Fried. I think Framber's going to be fine. I think this is a rough patch. I just hope he can kind of just mental side of his game, which is, you know, nothing that will show up on these bloom boards, of course. If he can keep that in check and kind of get that sorted out, I think Framber is going to be fine, to be honest. I mean, he had 8 Ks today, I think.
Yeah, he had 8 Ks and only 1 walk.
Right.
So like that's a BABIP-driven disaster. So that, well, and a grand slam to Chisholm on the mix-up.
On the mix-up, right. Like, if that grand slam, I know we're nitpicking. If that doesn't get mixed up.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know. Framber, I think Framber is going to be fine.
Well, and the bad thing, like, obviously you're going to keep him, you're starting him. This isn't a fab situation, but when you're trying to maximize the rest of your schedule, if the Astros stay 6-man, which they should, because they have more pitchers coming off the IL soon, it feels like. Actually, that might all be back now, thank God. But he only has 3 more starts to go. That's it. And it's at Toronto next week, then it's versus Texas, and then at Sacramento. Those are his last 3 starts.
And it might actually be 2.
Yeah,
my man might be my man might be taking a little break.
Yeah. So just keep that in mind. Like, it's not even a great schedule going, but you're starting, but it might be one of those, if you have better options, you debate situation on Framber Valdez, which is crazy to say. Crazy to say. All right. I'm going to jump to one here, and then we can go through some others if you want to rapid fire, but we got to talk Spencer Strider. This has been
horrific. It. I mean, let it eat, Bubba.
Yep. He went from 68th in the first half, which is still not good, folks, to 113th in the second half. 40 innings pitch, 6.58 ERA, 1.74 whip from Spencer Strider. 32 Ks in those 40 innings pitched, which is not Spencer Strider. And I know he's coming off the injury, and it's getting worse as he's getting down here. Our buddy Berksy in the chat there, Scott Berks, he mentioned like most of the guys with the brace surgery don't pitch many innings the following year. If you're looking from the All-Star break, it's been 17 walks and 32 Ks in 39 and two-thirds innings, Ryan. I looked at the live leaderboards that you got up here. Last 30 days, Spencer Strider, 18% K to walk has dropped to 5% in the last 30 days. That will not cut it for any pitcher, let alone Spencer Strider.
Right. And it's to the point where, like, it's not the same guy pre-injury. And the thing with the with this internal brace thing is, like, we just don't have similar. You mentioned, like, Scott did a study on it, and there's not, you know, Spencer Strider's already in uncharted territory in terms of, like, innings coming off of the procedure. But what about, like, a second season coming off of a big, we don't know, but, like, this is not the same pitcher that we saw pre-injury. And with just such limited data on how pitchers recover from internal brace long-term, like, I think got some serious, serious questions on whether Spencer Strider can be even a very good pitcher again. And I hope I'm wrong. Really hope I'm wrong. But I will not be making that gamble the rest for 2026. And I think you muttered drop for 2025. People won't do that if they have Spencer Strider, I don't think. But can't argue too much against it.
I tried telling guys in the Discord over the weekend when they're just baiting pitchers to start and then maybe drop. I didn't recommend starting Strider, period, in any of the discussions. And I mentioned dropping in 12s. I could understand the 15 hold just because of options. But, like, this past week, you had at least three guys that were 0% rostered. And Tong, Tolley, Bradish. Like, I take all of them over Spencer Strider right about now. Mm-hmm. And that's where that discussion point went.
Yep.
I want to ask you about a guy that we both like. You've liked him longer than I have, but we're both on board with you say, we say, y'all say, Kikuchi. Went from 61st in the first half to 106th in the second half. We're seeing 47 innings pitched, 5.59 ERA, 1.61 whip, 47 Ks to two wins. The last two starts, he's allowed 11 runs over his last 9 2/3 innings, 5 walks to 9 Ks over that stretch, Ryan, both on the road. His road starts are disastrous. Burks told us a long time ago his home road splits are there, and it's evident since the All-Star break. The home road splits are very evident in his production. And I know you can't really dictate that, but it plays a little role here, I think.
Yeah, it might. I'm not sure how predictive that is outside of, like, extreme parks, but it certainly has been a thing for Kikuchi this season. I'm a big Kikuchi fan, so this is one that's hurting me on a ton of teams right now. I'm still rolling Yusei Kikuchi out there just because I play in mostly 15 teamers. And like you said, the lack of options is really dictating that, but have very little confidence in the way he's pitching right now. I don't know long-term if it makes much of a difference, but he's down to a basically single-digit swing strike rate over the last month. Kikuchi is, with kind of your ERA estimators in the mid-4s, which is really bad. Is this just a tough spell for Kikuchi? Is something fixable mechanically? I don't know, but he's very tough to roll out there and start right now. And Kikuchi's, you know, being outside the top 100 in the second half among starting pitchers certainly drives that point home, where in tough matchups, if you like Kikuchi, think of him as an auto start like I do. I need to very quickly start rethinking that approach.
Well, he's at home this Saturday versus the A's. That could turn out to be a good one if the home run splits are legit. Next week's at Seattle, then at Milwaukee, and then home versus Kansas City.
We rolling. Let's go.
It's going to be interesting.
It's going to be interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, very, very interesting. As Scott Burke says, Kikuchi changed the grip on a slider and was really good. He changed it again 2 games ago and was awful. Not sure why, because he is an angel, question mark. Could very well check out. Sometimes these guys do things that make zero sense. All right, Ryan, anybody else you want to discuss here? You want to talk some listener questions? Because this was a very interesting discussion to kind of dig in on some of these guys that, especially on the right side, who a lot of people are holding on to and still praying can produce. And then on the riser side of things, it's like, should you trust it for the last month when you really need to hold your ratios potentially?
Yeah. Just a couple, just super rapid fire, but Shane Boz is on the faller list, 111. Could pretty much see that coming. Andrew Abbott has been the number 66 starting pitcher. I think pretty much anyone who looks at strikeouts and walks and kind of those basic skills could see that coming. Do want to bring up my guy, Matthew Boyd. Struggle bus lately. Summer 61 starting pitcher, but I'm still rolling him out there. Skills look good. Control looks good. It's just been a tough spell without many strikeouts for Matthew Boyd, which could be the wrong move on my part because this is somebody who has dealt with a ton of injuries coming off Tommy John, has not thrown. He's now at 159 innings, has not thrown that many innings since 2019. So this could certainly be a case of Matthew Boyd kind of falling apart as, he goes through this long workload after TJ. So someone who I need to start to think about is Matthew Boyd. An auto start lately has not been that great.
Yeah, he's kind of falls in that Robbie Ray bucket for me. It's like, is he running out of gas?
I can see that. Like. Yep,
certainly. A guy I'm terrified of. Do I trust him next season after that workload increase? A lot of questions to be had with Matthew Boyd.
But he's been one of my best picks this year. So,
oh, he was phenomenal.
House money. House money.
There's a reason you're dominating labor was a guy like Matthew Boyd for free, basically. All righty, let's do some listener questions in the Discord. This is where it gets good. So the first question we have here is from Martin Sikolsky. He says, why does Bubba hate Brian Baio? I don't hate Brian Baio. on this show about 2 years ago now, I was like waving the flag for let's draft Brian Baio. He's working with Pedro Martinez. What I hate about Brian Baio is the fact I don't think he's living up to the potential that people say he can be. That's what I don't like about Brian Baio. He's very good this year. It could also be smokes and mirrors. I think he's overachieving at the same time. He's on this list as one of the – he's up to 19th in the second half. We didn't talk about him with 2.95 ERA, 1.15 whip, 42 Ks to 55 innings. So that's the other reason I like my strikeouts. Doesn't really fit that mold. But I just think he's underachieved for what people expected him to be. That's all.
They just like picking on you.
Oh, I they got to because it's usually you getting all the razzing. So it's fair to give it to me once in a while.
Speaking of.
Yes. The Grizzmania says, second question, has Ryan apologized for Aaron Nolan yet?
I don't know, man. So, like, I don't even think I was that. Seriously, I don't even think that I was that in on Nolan. I only have him on one team across 16 teams. The only with the thing that made the waves or whatever is me making the Dylan Cease comp, which I would argue has actually come true.
It's pretty fair right about now. Yeah, Dylan Cease is rough.
Yeah, Dylan Cease is rough. So I'm gonna push back a little on that one. Maybe I do open my. Maybe I did like Nola. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like I liked other pitchers in that range. Obviously, given how few shares I have of Nola, I have loved Aaron Nola for years. So there may be some multi-year bias coming in there, but only one Nola share. Come on, people.
Impressive. Moose asks, how was the VT game?
Oh, it was fantastic. We ponied up for really good seats. We were club level, but in Mercedes-Benz Stadium is so freaking nice. I've never been to a stadium that nice for a game. We could actually walk down to the sideline and be right behind the Virginia Tech sideline. So I was right next to like Bud Foster before the game. He was out there. D'Angelo Hall with like all these hokey like legends from when I was there. So it was a ton of fun. We got on the Jumbotron. It was a great time. The game notwithstanding, I knew what was going to happen in the game, but it was fantastic. Would do it again.
Beautiful. Good to see. Mailman Mike says, anyone on the red list, you'd speculate on turning it back around, or are we just too late this season? It's Sonny Gray.
It's Sonny Gray. It's Max Fried. And it's Framber Valdez.
You say Kikuchi?
No, I'm not going to say Kikuchi. Yeah, Framber Valdez is maybe not after today, but definitely Sonny Gray, number one, I would think, on the red list.
B. Welch says, which of those seem fueled by BABIP, strand rates, etc., being abnormally high or low? We hit on a few of those, especially the BABIP ones, the Gray, the Frambers. Your ground ball guys seem to get the short end of the stick. When a ground ball guy has bad numbers, there's usually a first department you can go checking out.
Yeah, I'll also reiterate Cade Horton, Jack Leiter, Zach Gallen. This is all the riser list on the left side. I would say those three, a fair amount of luck. Luck has been involved on pretty much all the guys on the riser side. That's how you become a top riser in a lot of cases. But Horton, especially Horton, he sticks out, man. I don't think he's arrived yet.
That's fair. Scott Burke says, any pitchers in the green that you will not be in on in 2026?
Well, I think I can say Cade Horton.
You better not be by now.
A lot of these dudes, dude. For you. Zach Gallen, Gavin Williams. Brady Singer's on the red. No, is he a green or red? Yeah, he's Brady Singer green. I'm out on. Get rid of that guy. I'm out on Jacob Lopez.
I'm like 50-50. There's a bunch of guys I could see myself liking. Here's the sad part. I will not be on Zach Gallen, though. I'm done. Like, given it could have been a workload thing and he bounces back next year, but I'm just going to.
I'm actually not on many of the risers outside of like George Kirby, Lizardo. And I don't even know with Rodgers, like the market might be so high on Rodgers. I don't even know if I'm there with him.
It's so true. And then B. Welch says, and the opposite, which red guys will you be in on next season?
Same as the previous question. Sonny Gray, probably Max Fried, though the forearm still scares me, and Framber.
And I'll throw Robbie Ray into that list. I think another year removed from TJ could do
some interesting
things for him. Yep. So I'll throw him on that list with you as well. But all right, that'll do it. Another episode in the books. We'll be back Thursday night with your week 25 Fab preview. Any final thoughts before we head out on this wonderful Tuesday evening?
No, we will catch back up in 2 days. Time to think of another Bloom board for next Tuesday. We'll get there. I like this one, though. These last 2 weeks have been pretty interesting to talk about.
Yes, indeed. We'll have a Bloom board, or you never know. Maybe something will just click, and we'll have something else to do on Tuesday night. But we'll keep you guys posted. 2 episodes a week all the way through. We do not stop you here. There's no football season in this neck of the woods. So make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Intrick. Until next time, this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 273. Catch y'all later.